Welcome to the Breakthrough Success Podcast, helping you achieve that breakthrough you've always been looking for in your business. And now your host, Mark Gruberti.
Hello and welcome. I'm your host, Mark Gruberti, and this is the podcast for marketers and small business owners who are looking for the breakthrough for their businesses. I am very excited about this show. For episode 63 of the Breakthrough Success Podcast, we're going to talk about finding financial freedom through real estate investing with our guest, Whitney Nicely. Whitney started her real estate investing career after selling dump trucks. She flipped her first property in 2009 and has never looked back. She is a very successful real estate investor and highly sought after strategist who helps others create and boost their portfolios. Whitney also empowers women to dive into the real estate investment world in order to take control of their lives and finances. And now it is my pleasure to welcome Whitney to the show.
Thanks for having me, Mark. This is going to be fun.
Whitney, I am really excited to dive into this interview. Your enthusiasm is very contagious. And before we get into the nitty-gritty, how to invest in things like that, I'd love if you could share with us a little bit more about why you got started.
Well, I'm the fourth generation entrepreneur, and my great-grandfather started a dump truck company in 1939. So when I graduated from college, I went to work for the family company. And our bucks have always come from trucks, but on the side, my family was a real estate investing family, and I always knew that we had money coming to the mailbox every single month. But after I was working for the family company, one day I was watching Mom deposit all of the rent checks, and I was like, gosh, why don't I have any money that shows up in the mailbox every month? And she was like, well, you got to buy something first. And that was when it really clicked in my head that I needed to be investing in real estate. So the first thing I did was a mistake, and I got a real estate license. And I would, if you have one, fine. If you don't, that's probably a lot easier. But I wanted to learn everything I could. And then I figured out that the best way to learn was to do stuff. So I started buying land, and then I started buying houses. And took off from there, really.
Whitney, thanks for sharing us more about how you got started. And there are so many choices available in real estate. I mean, there are houses, there are apartments, like whole apartments, condo, like so many different options. So how do we choose the best option for us?
Well, that's going to depend on what you want. I work with three different kinds of people. I work with people who want cash, like big lumps of cash, $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 at a time, so that they can replace their 9-to-5 like they want out of their job. And then the second kind of people, and these are the most frequent people that I work with or that I talk to, these are people who want to supplement their income. You know, maybe they already make 10 figures, but their retirement account isn't as snazzy as they want it to be. Or maybe they just don't have as much fun, or they're not getting their creative, you know, juices flowing or whatever, but they want to create a side pot of $10,000 or $15,000 a month coming in that they don't have to get out and hustle for. And then the third people that I work with are straight just planning retirement. Maybe they don't have a 401k, maybe they don't have a big savings account, but they don't really need any money right now. They would rather buy something and let it pay itself off, and they get future gains later. Does that make sense?
Yes, you have these different people. And I mean, it's a really spot on answer because we have different trajectories of where we want to go. And I've definitely seen that advice in other areas. But I know something with real estate in particular is I've heard that you set a buying criteria to make sure that you're making the right type of purchase. So how can we set up a buying criteria that helps us to make better purchasing decisions?
Well, I like to buy houses without any money. So I like to really take control of a property instead of going to the bank and cashing it out, or instead of saving a whole bunch of money and then plopping it down on one property. I mean, to me, there's nothing scarier than that. So I would rather do what I do, which is lease options. It's creative financing, it's owner financing or seller financing, so that I don't have any of my own personal money invested in the deal. And you create these opportunities by getting out and talking to people and finding people that have properties that they don't want anymore. And then you're able to buy the properties from them over terms, over time. And I think that's the best strategy because then you really don't have any money invested or at risk.
That is a very interesting idea to not have any of your money at risk. And for some people maybe who want to buy that first property and down payment 20%, like some people do put their money on risk, like how would you advise saving up for your first property, or would you just advise just not putting any of your money at risk?
I would advise not putting any of your money at risk. I'll tell you, when I started, I bought land, and I bought an acre for $1,200, and then I bought a half acre for $1,500. Still not a whole lot of money, but I owned them both free and clear outright. No banks, no loans, no nothing. Just kind of, you know, saved up a little bit of money and bought something. And the coolest thing that happened was on that first piece of property, when I got to closing on it, there was a piece of paper that I had to sign off on. And it happened that I bought this at a foreclosure auction. And the lady that had bought this property before me had agreed to pay $69,000 for it. And she'd failed her payments, and it went to the sale, and I bought it for $1,200. So I have between $1,200 to $69,000 to gain on this property. And I'm holding it. I'm not doing anything with it right now. But on that second piece of property, I bought it for $1,500, and it was a half acre, and I ended up being able – there was, you know, some deed things that happened, and I ended up with the driveway. I thought it was my neighbor's driveway, but it turns out I own the right side of that driveway. And my neighbor is a big Fortune 500 company, and they were using the driveway to drive on every day to get to the back of their property. So I told them I wanted them to rent it from me. They ended up giving me $1,500 6 months after I bought it. And they paid me $250 every single month. I've had that property for a year, 3.5 years now. And they pay $250 a month like clockwork. They take care of the maintenance of the road. They end up paying my property taxes for me. But I invested $1,500 not really knowing what I was doing. And 6 months later, I got all my $1,500 back. And I had $250 a month in cash flow from now until forever. That is a good way to get started. Get in. Do a couple small deals, go through the process, figure out what you like, and then grow from there. A lot of people get in and, you know, first thing they want to do is go tackle some big flip project. No. I like to see people get in and get comfortable and then get, you know, a little bit further in and get comfortable and take it one step at a time. Don't jump in to where the water's over your head.
And I really love the idea of starting a little smaller with your first investment. And when people think of real estate, I feel like people think about houses, apartments, big structures that obviously cost a lot of money, but you've made these smaller investments and they've been able to pay off. And now at this stage, like, you're obviously more sophisticated with your approach, you've done more deals. So although investing isn't perfect, how do you determine, in a sense, if a property is likely to bring in a profit?
Well, we look at the numbers. The numbers don't lie. I don't go by my gut. I go by the numbers. And there's some very simple formulas and plans and strategies that we can run the numbers on a property to make sure that it's going to make us money. And a lot of times, and I tell my students this all the time, because you'll run into investors or homeowners who made a bad deal. Maybe they overpaid when they bought it, or maybe they bought it at a good price, but then they rolled their student loan payment in it, and they rolled their boat payment into the house, and they rolled, you know, who knows, medical bills and everything, and now they owe more than it's worth. Well, I don't have to take on a bad deal just because they accrued a bad deal, you know, like, just I don't want to see people be so hungry to get their first deal done that they end up taking a bad deal and losing money, because if you get that bad taste in your mouth, it's hard to get back in and try again. I want you to get some nice, easy, solid wins, and that way you'll have more confidence to go into some bigger projects. I bought probably 7 pieces of land and 14 houses before I bought my first apartment complex. But that didn't stop me from buying houses. I still bought more houses. I bought two more apartment complexes, and I just learn and grow with every deal that I do. And, you know, depending on what your goal is, maybe you just need to do one house and then jump into apartments. Maybe you need to do one piece of land and then you jump into houses. Maybe you just jump straight into houses. It, you know, you can start at little bitty houses and go up to big houses, wherever you're comfortable. And people always ask me, you know, what's a good price to buy at? Well, I don't know, because every market is different. Every seller is different. Every house is different. So it's really based on the situation. And again, though, we've got formulas and strategies and, you know, an ideal situation that we could put it through. But until we really look at the nuts and bolts and the math, I can't give a call on that.
Thank you for sharing those insights with us. And obviously, there are a bunch of different numbers that you've mentioned. Some people have different processes, but having that process of numbers will help you to generate that profit. And I'm wondering if you could give us some type of idea of what those numbers look like. I understand you don't want to share, but any insight would be really helpful for us.
What the numbers look like? Well, I teach my students to make 3 offers on every piece of property. So a lot of times, especially agents, they'll come in and they'll say, well, what do you owe? How much do you want? You know, and then we figure in commission and then boom, we land at a sales price. Or we may inflate it so that we have some fluff space for negotiation. But they're after one price. Wholesalers are the same way. Wholesalers come in and they've got a formula and they've got percentages that they've got to hit. And they'll come in and they give you one lowball price and that's it. But that doesn't always work. And sometimes when you, you know, knock somebody's knees out from under them, they can't recover from that. And if you don't have anything else to offer them, you're kind of a one-hit wonder. So I teach my students to make a cash offer, which is usually really low, but just to kind of get them in the ball game, thinking, you know, what I'm going to do here. And then I teach them how to make offers to get a lease option or owner financing over 5 or 10 years. And I teach them different strategies, you know, how you can massage the numbers to make sure that the seller's happy and to make sure that you're happy. And I want to make sure that my students are winning this negotiation 2 out of 3 ways. You know, it's not always about the purchase price. I, most of the time, could care less what the purchase price is. I want to get this house and not have any payments for 3 months. I want to get this house and not put any money down. That way I have 3 months to put the house out to the market and see how much I can get somebody to pay me to move into this house. And then I want to see how much I can get people to pay me every single month. Because I would rather have that cash and that cash flow now than be arguing over what the house is going to be worth in 5 or 10 years. And that's how I make a lot of money. You know, people give me $10,000 or $15,000 or sometimes $40,000 to move into one of my houses, and then they'll leave in 6 or 8 months. And I tell you, if people give you $10,000 or $15,000, especially $40,000 to move into your house, they are not going to destroy it. They're not going to destroy it. They're not of that mindset. And they're not regular renters. They are tenant buyers, and they treat the house like, more like you would treat it. They have pride in ownership. And that's in the way that you train your tenant buyers. And if they leave in 6 or 7 months, you get somebody else to give you another $10,000 or $15,000 down, because you still don't owe the seller anything but monthly payments. It's a beautiful, beautiful situation.
Whitney, thank you for sharing some of the insights about your system. And I mean, I'm really thinking about these possibilities right now, because I'm looking to explore this area at some point. And one of the things I see in investing is I feel like there are 2 main investing methods that get a lot of attention, one of them being real estate and the other being the stock market. So what do you see as some of the differences between investing in real estate versus investing in the stock market?
I have stocks, and it bores the fire out of me, because all it does all day long is go across the TV screen and go up and down and up and down. And there's nothing I can actually do to make it go up or down. It's completely out of my control. And I am a control freak. I need something that I can touch, that I can drive by, that I can put some money in if I need to improve it, that I can sell if I need some cash quickly. I need something that I'm going to be able to touch. I love that. And whether I have to drive 2 or 3 or 8 hours to be able to see it and touch it, or whether I drive 2 or 3 minutes in my neighborhood and see 6 houses that I own, you can't replace that. And, you know, of the, what is it, 3 basic necessities we need, heat, shelter, and food, that's never going to change. I don't care what kind of technology comes out. I don't care what kind of currency comes out. I don't care what goes on out in the world and shiny objects are flying at us all the time. You're always going to need real estate. You're always going to have people who need a place to live. If the economy goes up, if the economy goes down, people are going to sleep somewhere at night. And I want to own as much of it as I can.
Whitney, thank you for sharing with us some of the differences between investing in real estate versus investing in the stock market. And some people listening to this episode right now, they may not have a single property at all, but they're thinking about it. And I'm wondering, what are some of the best steps a beginner can take right now in investing in real estate?
Start learning your market. Go out and find a honey hole. Find a place where you can become a big fish in a small pond, where you can get in and get some deals done. If everybody in your area is going to one specific suburb or one specific, you know, section of the county, go the opposite direction. Because if everybody is going there, there's going to be high competition. And your chances of getting a good deal and making a lot of money go down. Go where nobody else wants to go. Don't go to the bad areas necessarily, but just go to more of the working class kind of areas. Go to, you know, somewhere that was popular 10 or 15 or 20 years ago. There's still good people out there, and there's still people that would want to live there. But you don't have to go to where it's trendy to flip.
Whitney, thank you for that great advice on some of the best steps that we can take. And I know that throughout the journey, there are going to be some challenges along the way. So with that in mind, I wanted you to share one big challenge you faced in your real estate journey and a powerful lesson you learned during that challenge.
If you haven't heard, if you don't know, I am a woman. I am a young woman. And when I started, I was 28. And I did not have a husband when I started. And my dad had his own real estate thing with my mom going on. And one of the biggest challenges that I faced was being taken seriously and being adult enough to do what it is I said I was going to go do. And a lot of that came more from my friends and family than it did my sellers. When I went out and gave my, you know, talk and I showed my sellers how I could help them and showed them how I was going to make money and, you know, this is what the plan is, they loved it. But I got a lot of friction from my friends and family more than the public at large. And once I, you know, kind of stood up and said, I am woman, hear me roar, and told everybody to sit back down where they belonged, I went absolutely to the top of my game so fast. And a lot of women struggle with that. There's a lot of men in real estate investing. There's a good number of women, but by and large, it's a good old boys club. And I busted up in there like, hey, y'all. And they didn't see me coming.
Whitney, thank you for sharing that big challenge and the powerful lesson you learned. And one of the questions that I just thought of was, with real estate, I mean, it takes a certain amount of time to find deals, make deals, improve the property. So can you give us an idea of how much time you're spending on the real estate side, like finding those deals, improving property and stuff like that?
You'll find more deals faster the more people you talk to. Everybody you talk to is a lead source. Everybody knows somebody with a problem with a house, whether it's that they hate their landlord and they'd like to find somewhere else to go, or whether it's they inherit a house that they don't want, or they can't afford to make their payments anymore. Like, everybody knows somebody struggling with real estate. And the more you let people know that you are a nice, safe place for them to confide their problems and their sins, the faster you'll get a deal done. One of my students started with me the 1st of September, and 7 weeks later, not quite 8 weeks later, she had two deals closed. She made $6,000 on each deal. She joined my program. She took action. She didn't sit around and play the what if game. She just got out there. She took massive action and she closed two deals in less than 8 weeks and made $12,000.
That's a pretty good ROI.
Yes. And she had a dollar of her own money invested in both of those deals. So from a dollar to 6,000, how much is that percentage? It's pretty effing good, though.
So one of the things that Breakthrough Success listeners know is that I am a huge bookworm. And with this love for books in mind, I always love asking my guests for three great books that they can think of on top of their heads. So, Whitney, what are three great books you could think of that would be a great fit for anyone trying to get into real estate or grow in business or anything in that realm?
The first book I would recommend is called Miracle in the Mountains. It's about a lady named Martha Berry who started a college on her family's farm in Rome, Georgia, and it ended up being the largest land campus in the world. This little college in sleepy little Rome, Georgia, owns more land than any other college in the world. And so technically this woman owned more land than any other man who started a college ever. And I absolutely love her. She did not make the history books, but Martha Berry is one of my heroes. The second book that I like to recommend is The Shoemaker of Dreams, which is Salvador Ferragamo's biography. And Ferragamo was a shoe designer, and he was absolutely obsessed with feet and shoes. And Grant Cardone has Be Obsessed or Be Averaged, and I'm pretty sure that Grant read The Shoemaker of Dreams when he wrote that, because Salvador Ferragamo was absolutely obsessed, like completely consumed with shoes and ladies' feet. And when you get into something, and I'm like this with real estate, people say all the time, you know, I'm the kind of person that whatever I got into, I'd be incredibly successful at it because I get completely consumed with it. But I spend all of my time and energy on real estate. I am completely obsessed with anything and everything to do about real estate. Like, I don't have a whole lot of friends because people got tired of having a little real estate seminar every time we went to dinner. But, you know, for the people that are interested in real estate, I'm a very interesting person because that's all I want to talk about. And Salvador Ferragamo was just like that, but with shoes. And he's a high-end designer. He still sells shoes. He's been dead for years. Then let's see. Third book. My third favorite book is Proverbs. And my favorite Bible verse is Proverbs 31:16, which says that it says, she goes to inspect a field and she buys it. With her earnings, she plants a vineyard. And to me, a Proverbs 31 woman has to be a real estate investor. And then with her earnings, she should plant generational wealth for her kids so that what she does day in and day out will last for years and decades and centuries.
Whitney, thank you for sharing those three great book recommendations for Breakthrough Success listeners. And I have asked you a lot of questions throughout this episode, and I'm going to flip over to you a little bit. So what is one question that you believe we need to be asking ourselves more often?
Women ask themselves this all the time. Am I doing enough? We do 18 different unpaid jobs. We're running around like chickens with our head cut off, but is it all enough? And a lot of times the answer is no, because we know at the end of the day, we did what needed to be done in the short term, but we're not doing enough in the long term. And that's when real estate really, really helps you feel like you are doing enough for your family. You're putting food on the table now, but you're also planting a harvest in the future. And that's really what real estate investing is about for me. And I actually, what I forgot, I should have said this too on the book recommendation. I have a book and you can get it at getyourfirstdeal.com.
Whitney, thank you for including that book recommendation and for sharing the question that you believe we need to be asking ourselves more often. And I'm going to give you the spotlight right now to just let us all know some of the other places that we can find you on the web in addition to your book.
Goodness gracious, if you Google Whitney Nicely, you'll find YouTube and Facebook and Instagram and just about anywhere you want to be, I'm there too. But you can always go to WhitneyNicely.com and find out the most direct way to get in touch with me.
All right, Breakthrough Success listeners, those links and the show notes will be at markcabrini.com/episode/E63. Whitney, it was a pleasure to have you on the Breakthrough Success podcast.
Thanks, Mark.
To never miss an episode, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on whatever player you are using. If you are a regular listener and haven't done so already, I would greatly appreciate it if you could give this podcast a review or a rating. Two ways you could do this are through markcabrini.com/iTunes or markcabrini.com/Stitcher. That ends this episode. Don't forget, dream big, achieve greatness, and unlock your potential today.
Want your tweets to get retweeted to my 360,000 Twitter followers? All you have to do is say something nice about the Breakthrough Success podcast and include the link markcabrini.com/iTunes. Once you've posted that tweet, email me mark@markcabrini.com and I will retweet your tweet to my 360,000 followers.
This podcast is a production done by Mark Cabrini. For more insights, head on over to markcabrini.com.